Morning. This morning, I'm going to have a little bit of a historical talk, so I apologize if that doesn't interest you, but I think that you might find some of these things interesting regardless. In modern-day Iraq, somewhere around 50 miles south of Baghdad, lies what used to be the city of Babylon. This is said in Genesis 10, beginning in verse 8, to have been founded by the grandson of Ham, son of Cush, Nimrod. In that same chapter, it says that Nimrod was a mighty hunter before the Lord, and that he was the first on earth to be a mighty man. This sounds nice, but it is believed by some that Nimrod wasn't so much the man's name as it was a derisive, descriptive term for who he was. One source I came across says that this word comes from the Hebrew word of marad, meaning rebel, and adding the N and M before it becomes an infinite construct, Nimrod, therefore meaning the rebel. It doesn't take much imagination to believe this explanation for why the founder of Babylon would have been named the rebel. I'm going to talk about some dates here, and as with any dates this long ago, they're widely disputed, and there are many different dates for these periods. There are three aptly named periods for the Babylonian times. The Old Babylonian period, approximately 2000 to 1595 BC. The Middle Babylonian period, from 1595 to 1000 BC. And the Neo-Babylonian period, 1000 through 539 BC. The Old Babylonian period includes notable mentions such as the Amorites, who the Israelites drove out along with the Jebusites and Canaanites, Hammurabi, who many of us remember from school as the first guy to enact a somewhat exhaustive unified code of laws and had them administered by judges who were closely supervised by his own advisors. And this code is widely recognized to have had a profound effect on the world since his reign. Hammurabi expanded the city-state of Babylon along the Euphrates River to unite all of the southern Mesopotamia. His code, a collection of 282 laws and standards, stipulated rules for commercial interactions and set fines and punishments to meet the requirements of justice. Hammurabi's code proclaimed at the end of his reign, carved into a massive finger-shaped stone pillar, was looted later by invaders and rediscovered in 1901 by a French archaeological team in present-day Iran. Their language was also of important note. The spoken language was a dialect of Akkadian, a Semitic language like Hebrew, and the written language was cuneiform, recognized as one of the oldest written languages. The Middle Babylonian period is best known for the reign of Nebuchadnezzar I from 1125 to 1104 BC and the prosperity that he brought to the region. Nebuchadnezzar I was a native Babylonian chosen by the people themselves, and he defeated the Assyrians repeatedly and protected Babylon from the Elamites, who had previously been victorious over Babylon. This period also canonized earlier writings from the Old Babylonian period and did a great deal to form and consolidate the Babylonian culture. The Neo-Babylonian period saw the threat of Assyrians, rivals of the Babylonians, and the rise of the Chaldeans. And so during this time, political power passed between the Assyrians, Chaldeans, and Babylonians. This period also saw notable people such as Sennacherib, king of Assyria, remembered for his military campaigns against Babylon and Judah. Nabopolassar, father of Nebuchadnezzar II, and Nebuchadnezzar II. This period also saw the fall of Babylon, which was famously predicted by the handwriting on the wall that Daniel interpreted as the end of the Babylonian Empire. One thing that you guys are probably all thinking of, why I haven't mentioned yet, is in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 9. Now the whole earth had one language and the same words. And as the people migrated from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. Then they said one to another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they had brick for stone and bitumen for mortar. They said to them, "Come, let us build ourselves a city with a tower with its top in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be dispersed over the face of the whole earth." And the Lord came down to the city and saw the tower, which the children of man had built. And the Lord said, "Behold, they are one people, and they have one language, and this is the only the beginning of what they will do. And nothing that they propose to do now will be impossible for them. Come, let us go down and confuse their language, so that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord dispersed them from there all over the face of the earth, and they left off building the city. Therefore its name was called Babel, because the Lord confused the language of the earth. And from there the Lord dispersed them over the face of all the earth. Much like the name of Nimrod, it seems likely that the name of Babel or Babel replaced the name of the city that they had at the time of the construction of the tower. This structure is, when I was younger, I believed it to be more of a tall, skinny tower. It's far more likely that this was a ziggurat, a much more like a temple, or what you would find in the Mayan ruins, almost a pyramid shape. And though the city of Babylon does not come into prosperity or prominence until 1830 BC, the area of Babylonia was one of the earliest civilizations. For example, the ancient land of Ur has been traced back essentially to the dawn of civilization. After Genesis, Babylon is not specifically mentioned until the prophecies of Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel, and all of which have references to Babylon. The predictions of Isaiah have to do with Babylon's ultimate destruction and the day of the Lord. The near and far view are often mingled, as in chapter 13. The destruction of Babylon is pictured in Isaiah 13, verses 1 through 11, as a part of God's plan to punish the entire world. The historic conquering of Babylon by the Medes and the Persians is specifically mentioned in Isaiah 13, verses 17 through 19. "Behold, I am stirring up the Medes against them, who have no regard for silver and do not delight in gold. Their bows will slaughter the young men, and they will have no mercy on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes will not pity children. And Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the splendor and pomp of the Chaldeans, will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them." The prophet seems to refer to the far view, that is, the destruction of Babylon, in relation to the second coming of Christ in the latter part of chapter 13, 20 through 22. Here he declares, "It will never be inhabited or lived in for all generations. No Arab will pinch his tent there. No shepherds shall make their flocks lie down there, but wild animals will lie down there, and their houses will be full of howling creatures. Their ostriches will dwell, and their wild goats will dance. Hyenas will cry in its towers and jackals in their pleasant places. It is time, its time is the close at hand, and its days will not be prolonged." As far as the historic fulfillment of these verses is concerned, it's obvious from scripture and history, secular history, that these verses have not been literally fulfilled. The city of Babylon continued to flourish after the Medes conquered it. And though its glory was not the same, especially after control of the Medes and Persians ended in 323 BC, the city continued in some form or substance until AD 1000 and did not experience sudden termination such as is anticipated in this prophecy. Interpretation has been made more difficult by the varied meanings of Babylon itself. Sometimes the term in Hebrew, Babel or Babel, refers to the city whose history continued, was flourishing even during the apostolic period when it was a center of Jewish learning after the destruction of Jerusalem. Sometimes the term is used in reference to the political power of Babylon, which obviously fell in one night when the Medes and the Persians took control of Babylon. And sometimes it is used in a religious sense, for Babylon has been the fountain of many pagan religions, which competed with Judaism and Christian faith ever since. At the time of the downfall of the city of Babylon, recorded in Daniel 5, the city was still a monument to the genius, quote-unquote, of Nebuchadnezzar. According to Herodotus, the city was approximately 14 miles square, with the Euphrates River bisecting it north and south. Two sets of walls, inner and outer, protected the city. According to the standards of the day, this rendered the city safe from attack from without. Herodotus was a Greek historian known as the father of the study of history. He mentioned a lot of these specifics about the city, and if he can be believed, the walls were very formidable. They were 350 feet high and 87 feet thick. Walls also lined the river on either side, and 150 gates of brass protected the entrances. On the wall, there were some 250 watchtowers, 100 feet higher than the wall itself, and the outside wall had a water moat some 30 feet wide. During the height of its power, provisions were stored in Babylon, supposedly sufficient for years of siege and designed to discourage anyone from attacking. Within the walls of the city was laid out in square blocks with beautiful houses lining the streets, usually three or four stories in height. And the city also included great parks and gardens, some of which, such as the Hanging Gardens, were outstanding wonders in the ancient world. These gardens were built on terraces and supported by large trees. A bridge, some 660 feet long and 30 feet wide, bridged the Euphrates River and connected the east and west parts of the cities. Notable buildings were also found, such as the palace of the king and the temple of Bel, were to be over 8 stories in height. This was a city proud of its supposed invulnerability, and a city who had ignored the rapidly expanding power of the Medes and the Persians. Media, as a separate kingdom, had matched the rise of the Babylonian Empire. After the Medes had captured Assur in 614 BC, under alliance with the Chaldeans, they had also captured Nineveh. The downfall of the Assyrian Empire, marked by these events, paved way for the rise in power of Media, which was in alliance with Nebuchadnezzar during most of his reign. Persia was also rising in power. However, under Cyrus II, Media was conquered by the Persians in 549 BC. Media and Persia were united in a common government which lasted until Alexander the Great in 331 BC. Their armies proceeded to conquer much of the territory around Babylon, and then they set siege to the large city of Babylon. The Medes had dug a canal, diverting the water that flowed underneath the great city wall, and at the time of Belshazzar's impious feast, they were entering the city on the dry canal underneath the walls. The drinking feast, celebrated by 1,000 lords in the city, apparently was shared by many other inhabitants of the city, and so that the normal watch kept on the wall was not observed, allowing valuable time for the invaders to conquer much of the city before their presence was fully known. At the time that the Medes were pouring into the city, the handwriting appeared on the wall. Daniel correctly interpreted this writing as the spelling of doom for the Babylonian Empire and the beginning of the empire for the Medes and Persians. At the end of Daniel chapter 5, and after interpreting the handwriting on the wall, Belshazzar gave the command, and Daniel was clothed with purple, a chain of gold was put around his neck, and a proclamation was made about him that he should be the third ruler in the kingdom. That very night, Belshazzar the Chaldean was killed, and Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old Thus ended the reign of the Babylonian Empire, the symbol of Gentile glory and the moral and religious wickedness. This concludes a very brief and condensed history of the Babylonian Empire. And though this may not stir your emotions, the gospel invitation stands as it always does. And if there is any way that this congregation can help you, physically or spiritually, let it be known as we stand and sing.